Welcome to the Inside Songwriting Podcast. This is where songwriters find inspiration every time. Hey friends, this is episode 16 of the Inside Songwriting Podcast. Thanks so much for being here. I'm Kyle Brody, and I'm talking to you from the clifftops of Sydney. I'm not going to ramble on for the intro on this one. I'm going to cut straight to part two of that awesome chat that I had with Michael Roberts on the last episode. Get ready for some more incredible, inspirational information that he shares, and I know you're enjoying it already, so I'm going to cut straight to it. Hope you guys are having a great week. I hope you're writing songs. I hope you're thriving, and I hope you're flourishing as creative ones. Thanks so much for being here. Here's the chat with Michael and I, part two.
Look, and it's being open to that, and I think we were talking about where the great writers that we love, or you know, there are stories about them coming up with stuff. I mean, most writers have, you know, a pad that they'll jot stuff down on and just leave it lying around. And you might come up with a phrase or a couplet or a rhyme or just, you know, something impressionistic, or it doesn't matter. But usually most writers have got a pad somewhere that is full of doodles and noodling, you know, snippets that one day you might use. Or
Woody
not.
Allen has index cards, right?
Yeah, different people use different techniques to find them. But what I wanted to talk about was in 33 Great Songs, the first volume, which we'll post this week. One of my favourite guys is Andy Partridge from XTC. So we look up River of Orchids, which was the first
Apple Venus
tune off Apple Venus Volume 1. And they'd had a few years in legal dispute with their record label, and eventually they got free of it. And so they'd had a couple of years to sort of construct the next record, whatever it was going to be. So Partridge, you know, locks himself away in his studio, and he's noodling with a Proteus, which has got these string samples. And the story that he comes, and so I never knew this, but researching this book to write it, I found this little snippet of him talking about what happened when he did it, because the song is it's mesmeric. It's like a trance, you know. It's this little rolling bundle of snippety string samples. And he's not a keyboard player of any renown. He's quite a lovely guitar player. But so he's just noodling around these string samples in the key of D and just putting one here and then a little sound effect and then another note here and looping it. So it's got this little loop effect. And then he writes of the moment it sort of all sort of came together for him, and it's just such a brilliant example of, it's almost the eureka moment for a songwriter, you know. And you read this and you go, I can identify with it here and there. There's been times when I've come up with something and I've just gone, yeah, there's this real swell of adrenaline.
Every songwriter knows
everyone gets it. There is a moment that comes through and you just get this adrenaline going, wow.
Touchdown.
And sometimes you go, where did this come from? But you know, best not to question it sometimes and just go, thank you that it came. But he says of when this moment hit him, when the loop is going of his song River of Orchids, he goes, I sat down one day and drifted off, doodling aimlessly on the Proteus string samples. Before long, I started to get hot under the trouser cuff. This cyclical phone pad sketch was really making me want to dance and yell. He goes, I made sure my garden shed studio door was locked, and removing my shirt, shoes and socks, I proceeded to fling myself around like a grinning dervish for a couple of hours. A couple of hours, like time's obviously standing still. He goes, I was so happy, scat singing myself into a coma. What a great phrase.
Yeah.
He goes, I decided to turn on my cassette machine to capture the best phrases. This was scat phrases, right? So This was all happening too quickly and too beautifully. I needed words to sing. Where's my notebook? So he goes, I couldn't lose this transient moment, because if it's gone, it's gone. He goes, frantically, I flipped through my rough book looking for words or couplets jotted down for just such an occasion. And there it was, the phrase, I heard a dandelion roar in Piccadilly Circus. and he says, he goes on, a real dreamer's line, but one that had stuck in my head because of its rolling contradictions. It just seemed to chase its tail the same way this music did. I was shocked and delighted, like a kid at Christmas, to find something so new and modern laying in happy ambush for me. How did my clumsy spam fingers find this?
And it's just wonderful the way he describes it. Hey?
What a moment. That's an incredible moment. And you listen to the song and all of a sudden that song comes even more alive. And it's such a great song when he sings, "I heard a dandelion roar in Piccadilly Circus." What a great line. Because Piccadilly Circus is not a circus. A dandelion is not a lion. It can't roar. So there's this, all these inbuilt poetic contradictions. And and then you listen to the line and you just take it in as just, it's a rolling piece of symmetrical wordplay that's just, you know, enjoyable at its own level. Mm. When you start to unpack it, you can see that unconsciously, consciously or not, again, the Dylan thing, he may have built in these layers of contradictions that maybe even he's not aware about until he thinks about it. You know, so consciously, that's subconsciously, yeah, you don't know, but it's there for anyone to wants to find it, and you listen to it. And when you see that, I think when you find that little story that goes with the song, which he wrote about to say, this is what happened when it all came together. And you just kind of read it and you go, man, that's fantastic. That's what everyone wants. You get a few of those, you're a lucky man.
Those are the great moments during the creative process that we can look forward to, you know, every time we sit down. Mm. And hopefully that, like I say, that, you know, that sort of magic arrives. But what I love is that, you know, there's 33 of these examples here. Mm. They've all got a story. Yeah, they've all got a story. And I mean, you even break down into the technical side of how the song was written, but it's also all these amazing, insightful stories to these masters whilst on the lead up and beyond the time when they wrote these songs. So there's so much in each one of them. In 33 great songs from 33 great songwriters, you cover everyone from Michelle Schacht to Jimmy Webb to John Fogerty to McCartney, Harry Nilsson, Ron Sexsmith, Andrew Partridge, Randy Newman. You know, it's amazing what you get from that. Just volume one. How would you sum up 33 great songs, or what's the philosophy behind this series?
I think when we're trying to construct something that would be useful to people as well as, you know, and not indulgent, I think what I'm trying to do is point out that songs don't come from nowhere, I guess. They don't appear magically out of the ether. Something's gone into it, and the inputs are variously what's gone on in that person's life. So to know a song, you kind of got to know the person. You should know a little bit about their history, what formed them, what circumstance they were in when they wrote the song. What were their influences musically? What were their influences, you know, relationship or personality? A little bit of that, you know. You don't need to write a thesis on that, but certainly to set the ground. So what I try to do with each song is set a bit of the groundwork of who the writer is, how they got to where they were when they wrote the particular song we're focusing on, and then what about that song they might have been trying to express emotionally, philosophically, you know. So we're tending to head towards songs that are a little broader as far as having kind of meaning or depth, I suppose, rather than just the light, superficial pop songs, of which there are plenty, and, you know, plenty that I enjoy. But here, I think if you understand the deeper stuff, you know, you've probably already gone past the lighter stuff, and that's fine. You know, I'm sure all of these writers have written frivolous throwaway songs as well as these songs that actually have a bit more to them. So I think, yeah, in doing so, what I'm trying to find is songs that sit well together, songs that are coherent as a group of songs, not just songs that, you know, are really broadly different from one to another. I think that I've tried to contain under a heading of a music's philosophy. Music's is a name that I've used before. It's a sort of an allusion to an old Greek god, the muse that drew the sirens, you know, into the sirens that drew the sailors into the rocky shores. That kind of idea.
It's fantastic. And it's also the name of your studio.
Yeah, Musics is my studio. And it was an old song that I wrote with a friend of mine, my best friend from school. I'm still very close to a guy called Anthony Aykroyd, who's a fantastic writer. He's moved on to another career altogether in comedy, bizarrely. Comedians, you know, with a depth of insight is a bit of a cliche, but he's certainly one of them. And we wrote a song called Musics when we were 19 or so, you know.
M-U-S-Y-C-K-S.
M-U-S-Y-C-K-S, yes. Yeah. So I've called this thing a music's guide, to use that, my studio name and the name of the song that Anthony and I wrote when we were kids. And I've called it the Music's Philosophy. I'll just read you quickly at the top of the songwriting books what it says, because it kind of sets the scene. You know, so I've written, the creation of a language of music is one of the great human achievements, and its ability to touch, comfort, and inspire us is endless. The 19th century German poet Heinrich Heine, apologies for the pronunciation to any German listeners, said, when words leave off, music begins. And it is the unique characteristic of music that it can touch the ineffable and the sublime in ways that words cannot. You know, so I think, to me, that's kind of where I want to investigate music. You know, it's got a lot of power. It's got a power to delight and to you enjoy very superficially, but it's also got depths and dimensions that you can get into if you want to tilt your understanding or inform your understanding to such a degree that you can extract those kind of, you know, very deep understandings and elements of humanity, if you like, which, you know, sounds a bit grand, but, you know, I think that's
I was just wondering why you were saying that, if you think that the listeners and readers might, you know, even relate to this in such a way that they start to explore the depth and the meaning of where they are in their either in their songwriting journeys or just as human beings and what that has led to with their creative output.
Well, I think, you know, at the end of that little philosophy guide, if you like, at the beginning of the chapters, I write the end paragraph kind of sums that up, which I've written: music is a force, from the mystical and magical at one end to the frivolous and ephemeral at the other. Mankind continues to try to explain the world in a poetic stroke romantic fashion, and in times of uncertainty, music is needed more than ever. The Music's Philosophy affirms the existentialist value that music adds to the human experience, and hopes that by encouraging reflection on the beauty and mystery of the art of song, we can help people determine where true value lies. We have the goal of helping to give people the tools to join in the creation of music, or to help enhance their enjoyment of it. And all you need is ears, as has been said.
Unquote.
Yeah, so I think, you know, I think, yeah, the more you can appreciate, the more you know that those sorts of tools are not secret. They can be discovered, they can be nurtured, they can be aided, and that's kind of what this is about. So you'll notice as you will know, and anyone who buys the books will know, also with the stories of the background and the content, to know the writer is to know the song. But then I'll put a little bit of technical information about when they've used some creative choices to use, you know, the sorts of chord choices, you know, the relationship between one chord to another. So a little bit of the numeric, you know, 1 to 4 to 5 chord, a minor 6 chord for people. Nothing too complex, but enough to hopefully to give people the idea that this isn't secret. It's not magical. You can find out stuff. You can work ways of understanding the meaning of a minor mood, a major chord mood, the relationship between this and that. That this is all explicable.
Well, it's already helped me. When I read about because it breaks down the songs into chord patterns and so on, and there's just even little mentions of, oh, okay, so in the bridge it goes to the A minor just to break up that pattern. And so then I start messing around with it myself. It takes me 5 minutes.
That's how it happens.
And I go, oh, I love this, sure. You know, the 1, the 4, the 5.
I think every writer, will understand that, and will have had the moment where they've gone through a song that they haven't written. They're working out the chords.
It's just this truck with the skips. I really hope it's not disturbing your listening experience.
A little
experience.
Bit of beeping.
It's unusual for around here, but there's a guy that keeps coming around the corner and taking one skip off and then putting another one on and then leaving. And
it's weird. Here I am watching the ocean, you know, the beautiful Pacific Ocean. That's all I can see. And I can just hear this guy unloading skips on the street.
Yeah. I want to share. out to him, "Hey man, not here, okay?"
How dare you earn a living?
There's not even any work going on that we can see. He's just right. Using the front of my place.
And there's a plane going across the ocean now, beautiful, but all to the soundtrack of a guy unloading a skip in the street.
Get out of here. Go on, scram.
It's percussive. It's percussive. We could probably write a song around it. Someone probably has.
Yeah, exactly. If I can somehow filter out in the recording afterwards, then I will. But otherwise, apologies about that.
Yeah, so we're talking about the content. And so each of the songs goes into the how and why, a little bit of the where, and gives you some structural information about it. And so if you're, everyone's done it. You've played a song, you play a chord in relation to another chord within that song that might not have never have occurred to you, and you go, oh, that's cool. And then invariably, in the next song you write, or very soon after, you're doing the same chord. You've got that chord in there, and you're finding your own way to incorporate it into your language. And that's, it's like learning a new word. I need to use this word somehow. Where do I use it? I use it in this sentence. That's the same thing.
I've been doing that for years. I spend time with a guitarist who knows the way around the fretboard way more than I do. And I ask them one question, and I go away and steal like an artist and use the little trick I've learned. You know,
absolutely.
It sounds nothing like what they were showing me, but it's in my mind. So it's because I'm really keen. I've got this new phrase that I've learned in this new language, and I want to use it.
Man, so. I often think when I was growing up, that it was much more secret. You didn't have the net. You didn't have, a lot of books around that you could get. So it was a little, you had to keep your eyes open and watch stuff and go, oh, what's he done there? How's that work? Get a record, play it slowly, try to pick the notes, all that stuff. Very hard. Now, YouTube will show you in a second how to play any sort of stuff. So, for that, the gloves are off, which is great for the new generation of people coming through. It will never write them a great song, but it will certainly help them negotiate, some of the technical stuff much easier than what my generation had.
Yeah, you're adding to your toolkit. Mm. You're putting more colors on your palette.
Sure.
And you're more equipped.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like
ready
a writer.
For the magic.
Yeah, exactly. You got to be ready. You got to be ready for when that moment strikes, whenever that is, I think, And I know in volume one of the 33 great songs, I don't know if I talked to you about it, but Tempted was the same thing with Chris Difford and Glenn Tilbrook. And Tilbrook says the same thing. He's a great writer, but he's going, you've got to be ready. As he says, most of the time it's about being prepared to catch those moments, because inspiration does strike and sometimes things can emerge almost fully formed if you're in the right mood to catch them.
And I agree with that.
That's exactly right.
I agree with
right.
that entirely.
Your antenna's got to be up. I remember Keith Richards in one of the books that we're planning down the track is called Becoming a Great Songwriter, and this will be maybe about a month or 6 weeks away from now. There's a great Keith Richard quote that I picked up from a conversation he was having with someone, saying songs just, to me, they zoom around the room and you get your antenna up and you catch them. He says, so you've got to be a receiver. He said, you got to be open. And then you receive it and then you transmit it. So he sees himself as a receiver and then transmitter of songs that are zooming around the room, which is, one way to look at it. And he's received a few good ones. So.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, similarly, I was listening to an interview, a brilliant interview with Neil Finn the other day on the Soda Jerker podcast, which is just full of great interviews. It's a great songwriting podcast. And he was saying he doesn't like to call songwriting a craft because that actually suggests that it's something we can master and get it right every time once we have the know-how. But it's not about having the know-how. It's about being ready.
It's about being ready. It's about all of those things, actually. I think there's a lot of several dimensions to it. Some people, I've spoken to my good friend Adrian, who's done some of the, I'll thank him here, Adrian Bryan, who's done some of the vetting of the chords and information, the technical stuff, because he's a music teacher. I'm not. I know enough to be dangerous, but he knows everything.
He's a man of great patience.
Yeah, so he's gone through and looked at, just checked all my information, corrected some where I've cocked up and improved in some, because he knows how to teach people theory. And I was speaking to him the other day about technique versus musicality, and it's a big thing with a lot of writers. How much technique do you need? How much training do you need? You know, is it three chords and the truth? Maybe. That's part of it. For some people, technique's important. For some people, it's not at all, you know. And it just depends, therefore, where you find value and you find worth in songs. But I know you and I have had the conversation. We spoke about Van Morrison, and you've got a great appreciation and love for Astral Weeks, which I don't share. And I love Van. I love a lot of stuff from Van. But to me, the way my mind works, it sounds like a guy in a corner, not looking at some other guys playing with him, where he's just playing his own stuff, and the other guys are all jazz players. And he's playing sort of country, soul, Celtic-flavoured, very idiosyncratic stuff. And they're all just noodling away around him. To me, that's what it sounds like. But if you surrender to it, and your brain can allow you to do that, you just find it a real open, mystical, fantastic sonic experience, enjoying it at some other level. But that's the way music can work. So it can, if your mind, you know, allows you that openness to do that. But there's some point, and I spoke to Adrian about it because we both love Van. We were talking about this the other day. I said, Carl loves that album. And he goes, I don't get it. I said, I don't get it either. I said, I think it's this. He says, I agree with you. But, you know, there'll be people that will argue the toss on that endlessly. But that's an indication of where technique is, can be important, and it can be meaningless.
It's also, you know, it is a beautiful listening experience for me, Astral Weeks. It's,
sure.
And lyrically, I think it's magic. And I think that it's association as well. You know, my dad gave me that record.
Yeah.
However, you get a song like Tupelo Honey from the album Tupelo Honey, and that's, to me, is one of my most favorite songs ever written. That's a 6 minutes 40 or whatever it is of bliss.
Yeah.
And it's a four chord trick.
Yeah.
But it's stunning.
Yeah, it's him doing his band stuff, you know, that era of him doing The Weight or something, which is a bit like And It Stoned Me, which is in volume two. We've got that to look forward to, which is a great
four chord trick.
Yeah, pretty much. And yeah, it's about, so it's a sum of all of those parts, music. Yeah, Neil Finn's right in as much as if it was a craft or something and you could say, if I put this with that and then this with that, I will have this. But it's not that such a neat equation, you know. You can put words and music on paper that might seem, you know, seemingly think this should work. And it just doesn't, there's no spark, there's no magic. It's just hollow.
Well, it's like, why would Real Madrid ever lose if it was all about what was on paper?
Exactly, or Man U or any of those teams.
Yeah, if it was all about what was on paper, why would they ever lose? They're waiting for the magic as well.
Sure. Yeah, there is that combination of things. It's what they call alchemy. It's, you know, you talk about the Beatles a lot, but you go back to them as the template for a lot of modern stuff. Lennon and McCartney, you know, worked because there was a magic between them. There was this other thing created when they worked together. There was this alchemy. So that band was greater than the sum of its parts. You know, they had a fine drummer, really nice guitar player, very handy bass player, pretty strong rhythm player, but they weren't the best musicians in the world. Pretty good singers, a couple of great singers, good harmonies, but not the greatest, but there was this alchemy that just came together that made them stronger. You know, Crosby, Stills and Nash spoke about it. When they had, they'd sing the three parts together, they often said that there was this fourth harmony that they all created, and they started calling it Harvey, after the big 12-foot invisible rabbit in the Jimmy Stewart movie Harvey. They started calling this other sound that their three voices created together, yes, this kind of almost fourth invisible harmony. And when they got it right, they said, you know, Harvey's here. It was like, here's Harvey. You know?
So that was a resonant tone that was created from...
Sure. It's those three combinations of voices just created such a beautiful sound together that there was this other dimension to it, almost like another voice, and you know that's how they wish to express it, you know, probably again mathematically. And this is where music is divisible into the mystical and the mathematical. So a logical brain will say it's understandable because it's just this interval to that interval, this tone to that tone, these tones together to those tones together. You can break it down like a, but that misses the point. Yes, there is a mathematical element to it, but to understand that, it's like an accountant. It's pointless, you know, an economist who knows supposedly as a person that knows, I think I've said it before, the cost of everything and the value of nothing. So to just understand music as maths is misses the point completely. It's part of what informs it, but there's this other element in it, there's this mysticism in it that creates something else, something magical. And that's, I think, what you and I look for, that really, again, informs the human spirit. There's this, not to get too grand about it, but, you know, I think a human being's life is only valued by what is valuable to you, is what you define your values. You define what makes life worth living. And you do it by interacting with life, by interacting with people, by communicating, by experiencing. Well, that's existentialism. So you find your way to experience life that is meaningful to you. You put your own meaning on life. That's it. No one else is going to do it for you. No other thing is going to give it to you. You need to find out what it is. And to do that, you need to be open to the experience. You need to be open to communication. And songwriting is just the best, one of the best methods we have of communicating quickly. You don't need to read War and Peace. You can listen to A Day in the Life and you can get a massive amount of information and experience. You don't need to read James Joyce, or it's, you know, as, I mean, by all means, read James Joyce, but it's part of it. You know, so music is a huge, you listen to Beethoven or Mozart or Bach, and you know, there's massive experience to be had and gleaned from that human endeavor. That's all part of the art that, you know, if life was just about eating and crapping and sleeping and waking and whatever else, it would be pretty dull. Art's, you know, a part. Art makes life interesting, meaningful, bearable, all of those things. And songwriting is a great art. It's in there with the great arts of that human beings have come up as ways to express themselves. And yeah, it's one that obviously you and I are fond of.
Well, it's so much so that we do things every day that prepare us, hopefully. Mm. That's what we're attempting, as well as just being utterly addicted to the art. I mean, I'm a believer more and more, because I know there's times when I haven't been ready. I'm a believer more and more of putting in purposeful practices every day that ensure that I'm on the right path.
Mm.
Because I know I've been through times when I've been so distracted, either willingly or unwillingly, from the craft, from the art, and I haven't been ready. And I think I've quite possibly missed out. In fact, that's another reason why we should save all our ideas, all those little recordings and all the scribbles, because there might be another time down the line when we are, when we just, we're right on that magic ley line that, you know.
I think, you know, we're all a product of ebbs and flows. I mean, well, the world is tidal. People are tidal in a way. You know, it comes in and goes out, and that's the way it is. But you've got to be open to knowing where you're at in your cycle of...
You want to take a holiday and not feel like you are missing out.
Mm.
So I think that if you're doing things like this, I mean, I'm not just giving this a big plug, but if you're doing things like reading these books, if you're doing things like I suggest on the podcast otherwise, like spending at least 10 or 20 minutes a day working on the last thing you were working on, or running over a song you've just written, or writing a phrase a day and messing with that, or reviewing your notes from the past week. If you're doing that constantly, one of these things, you're bound to be putting yourself on the right path each and every day. And what I'm finding at the moment is that these books are just igniting my creativity, because I'm trying new things, you know, and I'm going back and listening to things that I wasn't listening to, or that I haven't listened to a very long time. For example, I love Squeeze. I've got a greatest hit Squeeze in there. But it's been a long, long time since I have. And when I put on Tempted, I'm like, it's bliss.
Yeah, yeah, it's right.
It's a great song.
It's a reminder, I think. You know, I often think that the best writing, and something I aspire to, and whether I get there or not, it's not for me to decide, but something I aspire to is to write well enough about something that, and that leads people to go, oh, I've got to go and listen to that. I know when I read a good thing about an album, I'll go and find that album and listen to it and just see how it stacks up against what I've just read, or it reminds me about how good it was, and yeah, I need to really listen to that again. Or a film, but same thing. I can read a something that's, oh yeah, I must, yeah, of course, I haven't watched that in a while. I have to go and do that. Yeah.
We should give you, honestly, we should give your filmic site another plug. Folks, Michael writes about films all the time, and filmics.com, and that's FILMYCKS. Seriously, I'm not going to say any more. Just go and have a look. It's amazing. But the other thing is, with each song that's mentioned, we actually make it easier for you to have a listen to the songs as well, because it's, with the wonder of ebooks, you can make them interactive, and you can click through to fantastic. The song and have a listen. Yeah. Which, can you imagine that from 30 years ago when we were listening to this stuff?
You know? You just wouldn't be able to resource it. It's fantastic.
No, it's amazing. But yeah, it's a great project for you, because as my brother said, man, people want to hear what you have to share. And so I'm delighted that you're getting down to it. I'm delighted that I'm involved. And, you know, if I actually, which is probably already started happening, but I'll be crediting you and saying thank you with my new batch of songs, because I know that what I'm learning is absolutely sitting with me. From the practices I do every day with my songwriting, and there's so much.
Yeah, it's good. No, it'll be fun to see where it takes you, because we've got some recording to do ourselves later in the year. So,
yeah, very excited about that.
That'll be good.
Give us a little rundown. So we've got The Great Songwriters Beginnings Volume 1.
Yep.
The Great Songwriters Beginnings Volume 2, and we've got 33 songs from 30 Great Songwriters.
Yep.
33 Great Songwriters. We haven't mentioned The Beatles on Film.
Yeah, The Beatles on Film, which is, that's our Filmix movie series, if you like. But the first one, because it exists in the world between music and film, and that it is about the Beatles represented on film, I decided that I would expand, you know, stuff that I had written on the Filmix site, put it all together, put a whole overview connecting it, and offer that as an ebook. So yeah, that was fun. We could
do a whole episode on that.
I reckon we could. But the 33 great songs, we'll do those. We'll do volume 1 and volume 2 probably within the next week. They'll both be up.
So at the time of this recording, it's March 31st. I can't believe it's nearly April in 2014. So at the time of this recording, one of them is about to be released.
Yep.
The Great Songwriters Volume 1 and 2 are released already.
Yes.
And The Beatles on Film is already released. Yeah, you're a machine.
Yes, a bit.
This year is going crazy. I read something yesterday where a guy was saying when he gets an idea, he'll either blog about it or he'll write a book.
Yeah,
if he blogs about it, it can take him a day to get it right and do all the things you do when you're blogging. But if he writes a book, it takes about 3 months. And I was like, what? 3 months for a book? People used to take years, didn't they? It's just the way things are these days.
Yeah, I think what we're trying with these books is to make them... You know, I aim for about 20 to 25,000 words, depending. There's weight in them. There is plenty of information, it's not skimping on that side of it. And they're not too long and too unwieldy. It's not like you're reading a novel. So I think with the 33 ones, we've decided that if we went to 50, it would just be a little too weighty, a little too long. So 33 is a good number. It's memorable. We can do a whole series of 33s. I think after down the line, after I've done a project that we're both going to work on called Becoming a Great Songwriter, which is kind of pulling a lot of ideas together, I'm going to write 33 great songs you should know but probably don't. So we can unlock a whole area of stuff in there that, you know, of really obscure little gems that possibly not very widely known, but certainly deserve to be.
I reckon with that one, we can get some interaction going on with listeners and ask them to invite us to listen to songs that we should know that we haven't heard. Absolutely.
I would think, as I say, there's no one person knows this. It's too broad for anyone to know every great song, obviously. But all we're trying to do is to shed our little part of the world, shed some light on it to help out for people to say, there are some great songs I never thought about, or that's an artist I don't know, but if they're standing up in that company, man, I should have a look, you know, and check it out. So yeah, hopefully that's...
There can't be anything wrong with that,
part of what we'll be doing as we proceed and we add titles to the series.
That's great. Thanks for sharing so much on here. I call Michael Roberts Mickey Blue Eyes. Maybe we'll go into that on another show.
We will.
And I can also share the links to how people can contact you. Are you okay with listeners getting in touch with you directly?
Of course, Filmix.
He said it. Well, he didn't, but I'm going to say it now. He will get back to every single one of you personally. I'll share the links, email, and the website again in the show notes, and also all the links to the books. And we'll have Michael on again because it's fun, and we always have great conversations about songwriting. So thank you once more for listening to the Inside Songwriting Podcast. And please say thank you to Michael J. Roberts for being here. There you go. I heard them. They all said thanks.
Excellent.
Appreciate it, Michael.
Hasta mañana.
Thanks for being here on the quiet clifftops of Sydney.
Thanks to the rubbish collector.
All the best. Well, I'm certain that you enjoyed that talk as much as I did with Michael, and we'll definitely be having him back in the future. He's a great friend of mine, and he's just a wealth of inspirational and insightful knowledge on this craft that we love so much. As Michael said, you can contact him directly whenever you want, and he has promised to get back to everyone individually. So you can do that by sending an email to filmix@gmail.com. That's filmyks@gmail.com. And you can also check out Michael's amazing film review site. If you're into cinema, he covers all kinds of genres and directors, and it's a really wonderful site actually to flick around on and have a read. That's at filmyks.com, filmyks.com. Have a look. And thanks again so much for being here. If you love this podcast, then please share it with your friends. Tell them that you've been listening. And, think of the friends around you that, or even on the other side of the world, flick them the link that you think might get something from this. I'm more than happy to keep on sharing these thoughts and tips and ideas and inviting great people on for a chat, and I'll continue to do that. And also any reviews on iTunes are very, very much appreciated. So if you have already, thank you so much. And if you haven't already, then jump on over to iTunes and chuck in a review for us. I really appreciate you being here. I'm going to say goodbye from the clifftops of Sydney, and I'll catch you in the next episode. And I think you're really going to enjoy that too. I know that because it's already recorded. I'm just with a wonderful singer-songwriter, a great friend of mine. And I'm going to leave you guessing until I share it with you, which is going to be very, very soon. Thanks, guys. All the best.